Thursday morning, Evan Bray, great to have you with us. Thanks so much for giving us a little bit of your time as we open up phone lines for you. 1-877-332-8255. Text line open as well. Whatever you would like to talk about. I know I was getting a few texts coming in. We had Frank Hartz right off the start of the show. Frank is a great guest. He's a former Saskatchewan Deputy Minister of Economic Development and Trade. He was Chief Executive of Crown Investment Corp., President of Greystone Managed Investments, and did work with Protein Industries Canada as well. Now, just doing some consulting work, but he had a great op-ed that was in the Globe and Mail a couple of weeks ago about it's not enough from an agriculture and food perspective that we have the commodities here. We can't just ship them all around the world. We need to have more value added right here. And that prompted a text this morning from Scott in Amazon saying, you know, if you look back 50 years, we had packing houses all over Western Canada. Winnipeg had several, Regina, Saskatoon, Moose Jaw, Medicine Hat. Every major center in Alberta had them as well. Canada Packers was a huge company, and they're all closed. Why? A large packing house in Saskatoon, major employer, was there for decades. Now they're just a memory. Why did all these places close their doors? There is recent talk, of course, thanks for the text, Scott, recent talk about the possibility of some sort of beef processing plant and maybe Packer east of Regina at the Global Transportation Hub. That was a news story here that we were following in the last little while. So it's that definitely is one possibility. This as we were following this story about a week ago, people were pointing out that Saskatchewan is the second largest beef producing province in Canada, and yet most of the beef that we buy in our own stores here in the province has stickers on it saying that it was either processed or packaged in Alberta or Ontario. 90% is what the number I understood. 90% of our product goes out of province for that processing, packaging, those types of things. So just an example of what Frank was talking about, how we could do a better job of this value add here in our province, and laid out some good ways in which, whether it's through a tax structure or other incentives, that could happen. This morning, a big conversation. This was on the CJME morning show in Regina. A big conversation was, what's next now for the rail yards in Regina? So that if you look at Dewdney Avenue, they just finished that revitalization project. They're now looking for basically partners to fill up the rail yards. There's a lot of land there. There's been a ton of conversation. In fact, just into the new year, the city of Regina will be accepting proposals for partners, everything from homes to retail to restaurants and pubs. There's been hints at a new ballpark for the city, a new arena for the city. Would it go there or would it go on the existing exhibition grounds? Yet to be determined, but those are possibilities. So at the end of the day, have you got thoughts on what should go in the rail yards? People were texting into the morning show with their ideas, and there was some that were out there, but there was lots of people saying, you know, that's the perfect spot for an arena. That's the perfect spot for a ballpark if you were going to put one somewhere closer to downtown. Of course, not just revitalizing Dewdney Avenue and the rail yard area, but really it would be some way to attach it to the downtown with the rail line going through. It would have to be some sort of a walkway over top or somehow to connect to the downtown. But overall, that's part of the revitalization project that they've got going in Regina. And if you've got thoughts on that, I'd love to hear that as well. 1-877-332-8255. The phone lines are officially open. The text lines are open for you as well. Let's go to the phones. Let's get Les to kick things off this morning. How are things in Corning, Saskatchewan, Les?
A little cloudy, dreary, little skiffed of snow last night, but actually it's getting milder today.
It's milder, you're up, you're sipping coffee, and you're ready to go. What's on your mind today, Les?
Cost of food. It's going up $1,000 again. We're up to $17,000 now to raise a family of four in Canada.
That report just came out, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Mm-hmm. That's outrageous, Evan. You know, people are growing gardens and everything, trying to lower their costs and canning and everything for winters. But we seem to have an environment minister that you sounded a little fond of instead of Stephen Guilbeault, that seems to figure out that by shipping in food, and charging $500 a ton to the shipping companies and charging farmers carbon tax, it's not costing you more, though, Evan, because it's not showing up on your grocery bill as line by line as a carbon tax. So it doesn't cost more money.
There's no doubt it impacts it. Are you talking about Julie DeBruzin?
Yes, I am.
Well, I never said I like Julie DeBruzin better than Guibo.
Well, you thought she might be a little better.
I thought Mark Miller would be better in cabinet than Guibo, but I got shot down on that idea too. I was not a Guibo fan, so I was just thinking, like, gosh, anything's got to be better, Les.
Oh, I see. No, she is no better.
Okay, fair enough. Well, the price of food, the cost of food, and the cost of groceries is a great topic of discussion, because this is one that everybody can join in on, and we all feel it, right? How many times have you been in the grocery store? You've got literally a few items on the belt, and the total comes to $100. And you think, how could this be $100? I've got one bag of groceries. $100 It felt like would buy you substantially more. Sylvain Charlebois is going to connect with us a little bit closer to Christmas time. We'll do a bit of a year-end check-in with him, and no doubt cost of food will be part of that. 1-877-332-8255. We've got talking about packing plants, kind of as an extension of the conversation I started today with Frank Hart. We were talking about we need to find a way to add that value add to the agriculture and food market here. On that topic, let's go to Tom in Regina. Tom, thanks so much for calling in. Your thoughts today on open lines?
Yeah, just to follow up on the packing plant thing. In the early 2000s, I think it was 01 and 02, I worked with a company trying to open up a new packing plant here in Saskatchewan, just outside of Saskatoon. They were refused by the provincial NDP government operating license.
Really? On what? Do you know on what terms?
They weren't unionized. And that is the direct words from the premier at the time, who was Lauren Calvert.
Early 2000s, you're saying, Tom.
Early 2000s. And once you get that message out there to the investment community, and I worked with Wall Street, I worked with investment houses out of Houston, out of San Francisco, and they told me that once there is a socialist government in place, investment is staying away. And they cited the example of the NDP nationalization of potash. That's how far these thoughts go, and they hang on. So you got socialism, investment's not coming here.
Tom, the notion of government standing in the way is something that we talked a bit about with Frank this morning, like the role that government can play, not only through tax incentives to find a way to incentivize investment, whether it's in the province or the country, but by keeping that the whole regulatory structure set up in a way that it's not inhibitive of that. And so I appreciate you sharing that story. I'm not aware of that, but if that's the case, I mean, those are the types of things where government is standing in the way of progress. And that progress becomes the value add that adds to the GDP, boosts our economy, has all of those types of positive impacts. So I appreciate you you calling in. 1-877-332-8255. Lots of calls coming in on the line today, which is good. Open lines, always love that. Always love to hear from Wayne in Saskatoon. What are you thinking about today, Wayne?
A lot, Evan. but the one thing that kind of makes me wonder, that Carney and Daniel Smith, they signed that agreement for the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Okay, so that's all fine and dandy. They're grinning ear to ear. But then let's say they build the pipeline, and then you got to give BC pretty much your firstborn to let it get through there. Let's just pretend that works. They give them a bag of magic beans and BC's happy. But the tanker ban doesn't get dropped. Well, that's just like on The Simpsons, that Homer's Stairway to Nowhere. You know, everyone's falling off the end of it into the abyss. Well, where's oil going to go?
Right. Well, it's pretty clear that if a pipeline is going through, if they're successful with that, Wayne, they need a way to get the tankers in there. Like, you can't, I don't think you can have one without the other.
No, you're right. And again, doesn't BC hold all the cards?
Well, I mean, what we're being told, I mean, we know that federal jurisdiction, if you've got a project that goes between provinces, so it covers multiple provinces, so it goes from Alberta into BC, ultimately that is federal jurisdiction. Ultimately, the feds have the last say. But as we saw this week, the Assembly of First Nations are up in arms about the tanker ban. They're up in arms about not being consulted. You've got the BC government, which is, it's 100% political. Don't kid yourself. It's 100% political with the BC government, but they are not wanting this pipeline to come through. Last they've said is, well, they'd be open to the discussion, but it can't involve lifting the tanker ban. Well, I just feel like then what are you doing? Wayne's point is bang on. What are we going to do? Ship the bitumen out to the coast and then just what? Put it on trucks and drive it south? Like what? You need some sort of an ability to get tankers in there. So it's, to me, it's all part and parcel of what that final deal looks like. Okay, let's do this. Let's take a break. I've got still got a couple people on the phone here. I've got lots of texts coming in. 1-877-332-8255. It's kind of just a shotgun approach to open lines. Whatever you would like to talk about, Jack, you are going to be next, so don't go away. We'll take a break and be right back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. On a downtown train. Thanks so much for joining us. Open lines continue. 1-877-332-8255. Our guest off the start this morning, Frank Hart, in here to talk about, basically, he had written, co-authored an op-ed that was in the Globe and Mail a couple of weeks ago, basically saying, look, Canada's an agriculture and food superpower, but we can be so much more and we need to start acting like it. And Frank's been a big push behind, we need to have value add. We need industries that support and add value to our agriculture commodities that we produce here. I saw a text on the text line that said, help me understand, what are we talking about when we're talking about value add? It literally could be a variety of things. He talked about the expansion and the work that's been going on in the Yorkton area with the canola crush plant. It could be grain milling, it could be pulse processing, oilseed crushing, meat processing. We're talking about packers and meat processing plants, dairy processing. And there's so many ways in which you can basically do the work to extract, whether it's the proteins out of plant-based pulses, peas, lentils, those types of things, starches and fibers for food manufacturing. So it's basically, what can we do rather than just put our commodities on a rail car and ship it to some other countries? What can we do with our commodities here so that now we're not just selling the grain, we're actually selling the product that comes from the grain? It builds jobs, it builds capacity, it adds to our GDP. We're talking billions of dollars, but there needs to be things that can be done to incentivize that. And that's kind of where the conversation goes from there. So thanks to the people that are texting in. We appreciate that. This is how the conversation grows with people asking questions. Okay, what does this mean? How do we do it? I love it. We were talking about in Regina, they've done this Dewdney Avenue revitalization. So the rail yard area now has proper everything from water to sewer to all of that infrastructure was quite old. So this big project took the better part of a year. Of course, the businesses that it currently exist along Dewdney Avenue were impacted by that. But one of the things that the mayor has been talking about with regard to this is they are going to be looking for people that will partner up with them, private industry. And he was asked the question, will the city of Regina be providing incentives for those businesses?
I think the good thing about this process is that because it is very much focused on the negotiated piece and the visionary piece, the city as a whole is open to those kinds of options, right? Depending on what that looks like, it's tough to compare, kind of the most extreme options, but that's why we've leaned more into that visionary and how that development could be complementary to Dewdney as a whole and downtown as a whole and the warehouse district. So, absolutely, that's on the table. It'll just be a matter of comparing, those incentives and what that looks like compared to the overall outcome that they can achieve with their development.
So we are asking the question that started this morning on the dialogue on the CJME morning show is what would you like to see developed along the rail yards? Let's go to the phone lines. I want to grab the call from Jack here in Regina. Jack, thanks for calling in. What do you think? Rail yards are ready for development.
Well, Evan, I may be a voice in the wilderness here, but I'm going to push the conversation way out there. We have been struggling with development in urban renewal and downtown Regina for 150 years because of the CPR rail line right through the middle, bisecting everything with underpasses for all the traffic and no pedestrian viability in that internal area. And somehow we've got to get that rail line out of there. Maybe we need a sugar daddy with $1 billion, but they've held, CPR has held urban development in Canada by the throat for 150 years. And that has to go out. We can't just sit and say, oh, are we going to have a ballpark in there? Are we going to have some high-end restaurants and things for the urban development pedestrians? That's a big, big issue. That's the elephant in the room for me as far as Regina's concerned.
It's I'm not going to argue with you, Jack, because that right away created this conversation. How do you connect the rail yards to downtown? They'd have to build some kind of a walking, you know, pedway or something over top. Like, you're basically going over the railroad tracks. So there are lots of complications and safety concerns that come along with that. There's no doubt about that. Let's keep this conversation going here. I wanted to grab the call from Rick on the road this morning. Rick, we're talking about Dewdney Avenue revitalization, the rail yards ready for development. What's your view?
So if you look at most successful major cities in the area, large populations, a fancy hockey rink, lots of good businesses in the area. I mean, Edmonton, Calgary is doing something like that too. Winnipeg with the MTS Center. But there's one thing that they have that we don't, Evan, and that is population. Okay?
Yep.
So you build this big, fancy hockey rink, but nobody's going to Pats games as it is. You're telling me we build this fancy rink or a nice baseball stadium and snap your fingers, that thing's full every night? We got to focus on good quality local businesses as well as what's already there, good green spaces, affordable housing. And then maybe you can consider putting a reasonably sized baseball field there or a similar sized hockey rink. But it's got to be priorities. A hockey stadium, a baseball field, those are not priorities. The taxes are going to go even higher unless we get a local company that owns some other sports teams in the area to write a big check.
Someone, let's give the mayor a call and get Rick on the planning committee. I like it. I like your thoughts, Rick. You make great sense. There needs to be, as part of the development, there needs to be residential, there needs to be green space, there needs to be retail and restaurants and all of those things. You could probably have another hotel easily in the area as well. Think about Rider games alone, just the proximity to Mosaic Stadium. Yeah, something to think about there. Thanks for the call. Okay, we're going to take our next break. We will be back. Open lines continuing and some special guests that will be visiting us before 10 o'clock. We'll talk about that next here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJ. What's going on? What's going on? What's going on? Yeah, what's going on? What's going on? Oh, what's going on? What's going on? Coming up a little closer to 10 o'clock, so just about 15 or 20 minutes from now, a very important conversation with guests coming into studio. We have had Lieutenant Colonel Ed Stanowski on our program before. You know Ed Stanowski maybe as a former NHL goaltender, played for, I think, the better part of a decade, but he also had a long career with the Canadian Armed Forces. He, along with General Rick Hillier, have been really advocating to try and get some sort of a process in place in Canada where a committee could be formed to assess whether or not the Victoria Cross should be awarded to Armed Forces members. There are no members of the Canadian Armed Forces that have been awarded Victoria Cross Medal, which is the highest honor you can get in the Canadian Armed Forces. No one has been awarded that since World War II. Now, the advocates will say, and this morning we will meet someone who is deserving of it. There are people like Master Warrant Officer Willie McDonald, who is retired now from the Canadian Armed Forces, recipient of the Star of Military Valor. That's the second highest ranking award you can get in the Canadian Armed Forces, but is deserving of that next step, the Victoria Cross. We will have Willie McDonald in studio this morning, along with Ed Stanowski. We'll talk about a proclamation that was made at the Saskatchewan legislature yesterday, and we will hear Willie McDonald's story. It's quite something. Afghanistan, early 2000s. It's quite a story, and I look forward to having, I'll be honored to have those two guests in studio. That's coming up here, like we're probably talking about 10, 15 minutes away. So we go back to open lines. Here's two topics coming together because we're talking about value add in the ag industry. So how could we do it? We've been talking a bit about meat packing. Maybe we need to get back into the meat packing industry here in the province in a bigger way. And then we're also at the time talking about how do we develop the rail yards in Regina. That Dewdney Avenue revitalization is done. Well, we get a text from Frank in Montana, says you could put a meat packing plant along Dewdney. There you go. Two conversations meld into one. 1-877-332-8255. Louis in Regina with a text saying, you know what I don't like about this yard situation is the city administration has the final say. Is that supposed to be a good thing? I heard the mayor say that on the morning show this morning. I'm assuming it's got to do ensuring that they fit with compliance with zoning and those types of things. But that'll be something I think as they make the announcement, they are going to be making the formal announcement, looking for partners and development and design ideas in early in the new year. We'll find out more details about that. 1-877-332-8255. Open lines is here. We can talk about whatever you like. Let's go to Alan in Estevan. Alan, what's on your mind this Thursday morning?
Morning. What bugs me is I thought we lived in Canada and I thought my currency had some value to it. Obviously, it doesn't when I come to the customs. Go down to live in Estevan, go to Noonan, pick up a parcel, bring it to the border. I want to pay cash for the duty. They don't accept cash there. They have to pay by credit card. So to me, that's a little bit discrimination, too, the people that don't have a credit card or want to have a credit card. And I'm thinking that the Carney government's losing hundreds of thousands of dollars, unbelievable amount of money every day, because the credit card companies are taking a percentage of those sales that they're getting at the customs, they take to the credit cards instead of people using cash. So I thought I lived in Canada, I guess, so the value of our money isn't worth nothing.
It's crazy to me. I mean, this whole move to cashless, we talked about this. That was a whole talk topic we did a few months back because I'm a guy that always likes to have a little bit of cash in my pocket. And, you know, if you're talking like Alan's talking about paying duty, well, sometimes duty is $4.90, right? I mean, it can be a very little amount. Why can't you throw a couple of toonies and some quarters on the table and say, here you go? Yeah. But I'll tell you go to a lot. I mean, how many sporting events now? There's lots of places that it's like, sorry, we don't accept cash. It's all cashless. Probably quicker for those that are taking the money. You just tap your card or whatever. But Alan's point's well taken. What if you don't have a credit card? What, you know, you'd like to be able to think you could still pay cash. 1-877-332-8255. The text line's been busy. So our friend John, who quite often will text into the program, lives in White City by summer, Mesa, Arizona by winter, and is in Mesa now. He likes to every day send us a little something from, it could just be an observation he made from the pickleball court, or today he said, by the way, Evan, on Arizona news this morning, there's a story, over 40 trucking schools may lose federal certification under a federal crackdown. I'm thinking Canada could take some lessons. So I'm not sure what that's about. Haven't seen that story, but clearly something to do with certification. I'm guessing it's got to do with drivers, training standards, things like that. Anyway, John, thanks for reminding us you're in Mesa, Arizona. Brad saying when Ukraine gave up its nuclear weapons in the 1990s in exchange for security guarantees, they were betrayed. They won't make that mistake again. If Europe was smart, they won't cross them again. A heavy price will be paid if they do. Europe needs to put on its big boy pants and stop pandering to Putin. I noticed on the topic of Ukraine, I noticed in this Globe and Mail here the other day, the Canadian government buying $200 million of military gear for Ukraine. through a mechanism set up by Donald Trump and the NATO military alliance. So this is called the Prioritized Ukraine Requirements List. Think of this like a wedding registry. You know how now, I mean, this wasn't always the case, but now lots of people, when they get married, they sign up to a wedding registry. So you can log on and say, oh, what do they need? And then you pick something off the list and buy that. So you're not buying them a toaster if they already have it. Well, that's kind of what this is. The Prioritized Ukraine Requirements List is like that. It's a registry of what they need. And so if allies want to help them out, they can do so. So Canada just spent $200 million on military gear for Ukraine by going on to that Prioritized Ukraine Requirements List and buying what they need. Keep in mind, in total, Canada has spent $22 billion in assistance to Ukraine since February. That is a number that this becomes a topic of conversation, because I'm a fan of supporting Ukraine 100%, but there are lots of people. Callan Oxbow, I think, was the person that just sent a message in the other day saying, you know, we spend a lot of money on foreign aid and billions of dollars helping countries outside of Canada's borders. And yet, inside Canada, we have communities that don't have clean drinking water, safe drinking water. So maybe we need to find a way to scale back a little bit, because those are big numbers. $22 billion is not a small number in terms of aid. 1-877-332-8255. We got into quite a meatpacker discussion on the text line, I'm noticing, talking about a lot of times there was apparently a big strike back in the 80s at the meatpackers. Union went on strike. The company closed the doors and didn't reopen since then. Okay, let's grab one more call here before we have to take our break. We'll go to Jack in Lemberg. Jack, thanks for calling in. Your thoughts on open lines.
Good morning, Evan. We've got a small business here for 42 years. We always remit our GST quarterly. Now they came to us, if we remit by manual, they charge us $250 to process it. And I figure they're discriminating against small businesses because we don't have a computer.
You know what? You're not the first person, Jack. Thanks for the call. You're not the first person to bring this up. If you want to remit your GST, and think about the small businesses, Jack's point well taken, that don't have an elaborate computer system, don't have a way to automatically generate these reports. A lot of them are doing them longhand, filling in the forms, diligently submitting the money that the government requires through GST, and then getting charged a premium because you did it on paper as opposed to doing it electronically. So it's a fair comment, Jack. All right. We've got our guests lined up here, so let's take a break and get set for a great discussion when we come back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.